As an ophthalmologist, my training was about 20 years ago. So the disease, I became aware of the disease right in the early stages of my career. The problem was really our knowledge was limited to recognizing a pattern and not having many options of treatment, and probably a lot of misinformation about when to treat patients, not to treat patients. So the involvement was early on, and luckily, you know, I've been living through this evolution in the way the disease is diagnosed and treated.
When you look at your own position in researching into the disease today, where is it that you feel that you can offer something to the patients who are here at this conference?
I think because of the disease where we don't know everything, we are certainly skimming the surface in some aspects of the disease, there's a great deal that we have to understand and which will help us improve management of these patients. The research side, I think, a better understanding of really this issue of family members being affected or affected, why they're affected, if they have the same markers in their blood than their relatives, and these are things that we don't know very well at all. Better treatments. How are we going to give patients medications that produce less side effects and long-term control of their disease? Better monitoring. We're doing all this electrophysiology, which is not widespread. It's not everyone who does that. So I think this is something we have been doing for a while as a diagnostic tool, but also as research tool in understanding how the disease responds. So there are many areas where we as clinicians can help the patients, and I think this would be in better diagnosing, developing better treatments, making sure we get patients early on with the disease so we avoid long-term damage, and spreading the word so other colleagues will do the same. And patients, like we heard today in the meeting, some patients not treated for many years.
I think when we look at the patients who are here today, there is a little bit of a frustration that there seems to be different protocols from different consultants. And we see that there's a widespread difference in how they have been treated.
Sure.
How do we make sure that we, if not necessarily agree on the protocol, how do we streamline the forms of treatment a little bit better so everybody who comes in to their physician complaining of birdshot symptoms gets an early diagnosis? Because I'm sure we agree early diagnosis is the key figure.
I think so. I think it's early diagnosis and treating patients very quickly. Well, education is a key point in any area in medicine, and I think we do have meetings on a regular basis to try to attract colleagues who are not in academic centers many times, just working general hospitals, to be able to be exposed to all these diseases and how do you recognize them, how you treat them. Clearly, you know, we can't force people to attend these courses, so there must be other mechanisms by which we can reach them. The College of Ophthalmologists in the UK circulates guidelines on diseases, like how to manage, how to diagnose, and potentially one way is the college taking the lead in making sure every consultant across the country receives information about the disease in terms of how to recognize it and how you should treat it and how you should monitor it. I think there are two ways that the consultants will respond. Either they will feel capable of following those guidelines and taking this forward by themselves, or at least they'll recognize the disease and make sure the patients are referred to someone who has more experience and can do that for them. But yeah, maybe a mechanism would be education, but via a communication which will reach each individual rather than counting on their presence on when you're teaching about it.
When we look at the fact that 10 to 15% of the population have got the antigen, have we got any idea what is the epigenetic, the environmental trigger that takes some of these 10, 15% and make them an inflammatory process?
Yeah, we have people who have the marker but don't have the disease. So what would be very important for us is to really do a proper study when we look at these two groups very carefully and try to establish what is different between the two that could be a factor in triggering the disease or complicating the disease in a way. This is something Professor Stanford mentioned today, that we are embarking on a study, and when we hope that patients who are here today will be willing to collaborate and their relatives will be willing to collaborate, in which we will look into individuals who are positive but don't have the disease and have family members who are positive and have the disease and see if we can spot differences which give us a clue. At the moment, I don't think we have. We tend to blame viruses very frequently. You know, we have a viral infection, we have this, but that's very easy to do without any real evidence. So I don't think we can say much at the moment.
The fact that there seems to be an agreement between the specialists that it's a bilateral condition, but we in some cases have a unilateral onset with up to 7-8 years difference. Is there any potential triggers that starts it on one side rather than the other side?
That's really a very good question. I just spoke to a lady before I came here who has had a disease in one eye for 10 years and doesn't have any problems in her other eye. So this is a very, very unusual situation. Why only one eye gets involved? And why the delay, as you say? Why someone gets it now will take several years before they get it in the other eye? I have no clue. I really, be very honest with you, I don't think anybody knows for sure. How can you get exposed to a trigger that selectively affects just one eye and doesn't affect the other eye? Very difficult as well. And we know so far, birdshot is not a disease associated with systemic problems. So it really makes it hard to understand how an antigen in the eye specifically is recognized by the immune system and attacked and producing this disease in the way it does. The issue also that affects the two vascular systems in the eyes are very, very peculiar. It's unusual for ocular diseases to do that. So there are many things about birdshot that make it a very particular disease. I think our knowledge is limited. I think what we discussed at the end, the lack of pathological specimens and models that can replicate the disease so you can study in models as well, this is all compounding to our ignorance, let's put it that way. So.
Do you, without having the research, but do you see any lifestyle similarities in your patients?
Not that I can think of, not really. Patients are very variable in their ages, very variable in their background, in terms of where they come from, what they do. I don't think I have anything that crossed my mind as a potential trigger.
If you have the chance to speak to all the people around the world that see patients that potentially come in with birdshot-like symptoms, how could we get the colleagues out there to be more alert?
Yeah, I think I would probably highlight what the symptoms are in terms of what these patients come with very peculiar symptoms, which make it difficult because if I give you a symptom and when I examine your eye, I don't see anything that immediately answers the question, it's very easy for you to say your examination is normal, I don't know where this is coming from. So complaints we heard today, the vibrating vision, the flashing lights, but this scotomas and other things that patients develop should alert someone that something that is over a long period of time developing should at least be investigated by having an HLA in 29 done.
When you have a patient that is on a high doses of steroid, we're talking 60, we're talking 80, in some cases we might talk even a higher doses. Mm-hmm. As a consultant, what is it like actually dealing with these patients? Because we know they get a lot of side effects.
I think one of the key aspects is that before you start the treatment, you have to have a good discussion with the patient about the potential side effects. So nothing comes as a real surprise. It's very bad when patients are given tablets and they're not told anything, and then they start getting side effects and they really panic about it. They are not expecting anything. So if they are instructed and they're told that potentially things could happen, that's when it becomes easier. And I usually tell them, clearly it's impossible to tell them every single aspect of the potential side effects, but you give them a very good idea, and now we have more recently been giving patients information sheets which will give them a bit more deeper explanation about what to expect. When patients come back and they are really suffering very badly and the side effects are very, very severe, then we need to try to find other ways of offering help. Some situations you have to stop the treatment. You have psychotic events, you have dangerous situations when you cannot just tell them carry on, you know, you'll get better. In most of them, if they manage to overcome that stage and the medication starts to come down, they tend to tolerate better and you get over that initial hurdle. Even if I give them any other immune suppressive agent, in the early stages what's controlling the disease is the steroid. It's only when we have down to much lower levels with the other drugs on board for some time that we get a balance. So patients with severe side effects, not tolerating the drug at all, then the drug probably has to be stopped and we have to find other alternatives. It becomes difficult because we don't have a lot of experience with monotherapy with azathioprine or Cellcept alone. So eventually in this case, it's combining drugs such as cyclosporine we heard today we're not using very frequently, but this might be one situation when you might want to combine two drugs to reach the same effect that you had with your steroid therapy, or eventually going for, if we had implants, for overcoming the limitations of the side effects, putting something into the eye that would give them the protection they need. So there are ways, very limited ways, around these intolerance to the steroids or significant side effects, but we need to look into them.
I've spoken to a lot of patients today, mm-hmm. and they actually feel sorry for the consultant who had to deal with them in the early stages of the steroid treatment, because they look back and know that they were maybe not the most rational people to have around, and their approach and the way they actually interact with the professionals were maybe not right. How do you deal with when a patient is very strong in your interaction?
I think I'll say that I very rarely have been in that position. I've been practicing for 20 years here in the UK, I mostly find that the patients, once they are told what to expect, and you're very open and you give them time to discuss, they are more understanding of the issues. And they tend not to be aggressive or difficult when they come back. They have problems. They'll tell you they have problems. Of course, we are not talking about those with severe problems that I have to change medication because it's unacceptable. I'm talking about people who are struggling but could be, let's say, upset or very negative about the whole experience. I think if you have an open door, your channel of communication is good, that experience is much less negative. And if they come back to me with a big problem, they are unhappy, the best way is to sit down and talk and make sure you understand why they're so upset and they understand why things are happening the way they are. And they can see the light, they can see where we're moving to. If they don't understand there is a situation in which this will change, then it becomes very difficult to accept that you're suffering all this for what? What's going to happen to me next? So that's where we have to make sure you discuss options, you give them alternatives, and clearly showing that the steroid is not there for the long run. The steroid is there, not at a dose for the long run. It could be there for a long time, but much lower doses when the side effects would be more acceptable. There are situations when there's a breakdown between consultant and patient communication, in which case it's the best interest of the patient to be referred elsewhere. And I have good colleagues that I can refer the patient to when we get to that stage, because it's essential that patient and doctor are in synchrony, that they really understand what's going on, and the patient respects the consultant opinion and is understanding what is planned. If that's not happening, then best to have someone else taking over, and you can put him in the hands of someone who knows also what to do.
One thing that has become pretty clear to me is that when the patient gets the diagnosis, when the label gets put on them, they find that it's a big shock, because obviously it's something that's going to follow them for the rest of their life. Some patients have said, listen, it was just told to me, I was given the information, and I was given a handshake. I was kind of left on my own with the diagnosis. What are your thoughts on that process?
Well, I think it goes for birdshot as well as it goes for other chronic disorders. When people have the diagnosis of something that there's no cure for, it's always a shock. It's always difficult to accept, come to terms with this prospect of what's going to happen to me, with my life, my vision, my job, my family, and all that. And so all these questions are in your mind. And the difficulty sometimes in an NHS setting is time, and the environment's not probably the best environment for a long conversation regarding many issues. I think by far when patients are given a diagnosis, they should be supported in the sense that they'll be treated. They have to understand that we can treat them, that there are things that need to be done. What we don't do well today is to offer them psychological support. That's lacking. We have a plan at Moorfields now to develop a very good support service with psychologists and trained nurses who will be able to take on board patients with chronic diseases who are not coping well, who are having difficulties in their life. Whatever the difficulty is, to be able to help them overcome that and understand what their needs are. And that's what will be done in a different setting, in the hospital, but a separate clinic when there will be time and the right environment for a discussion at that time. And I think the way forward is to really have this kind of support, that you identify someone who is struggling and that patient will be referred to see someone who's trained in that field to provide the support they need. I think we're not even properly trained to do that, and that's a real criticism to what we do, but we understand the limitations and we do the best we can, but it's not perfect.
As a consultant today, what are you hoping to get out of the day like this? I understand that this is a fantastic opportunity for you to get exposure to a lot of patients.
Sure.
But where would you like to take this from? Give me your thoughts on an event like this.
So I think the two sides to look at. One is the fact that we, by knowing more patients, you know, apart from the ones I normally have, I'm meeting more people. I'm listening to their personal experiences, and they're telling me their treatments, they're telling me what's happening to them. It gives me more, let's say, information to deal with my own patients and new patients I'll have in the future. But I think importantly is this, it's a moment, it's a good moment for us to pass on to the patients this critical fact that we need to do more research. And research in this area will depend significantly on their collaboration. They have to consider that if we want to find new avenues for whatever we want to do in diagnosing, monitoring, and treating, their collaboration and people they know who have birdshot is essential. So we depend on that to be able to propose any protocols, any studies. And I think this is a very important day for that, when patients will see who we are, what we do, and we will understand that if we come to them in the future with a proposal, what are the reasons why we're doing that. So I think it's an important day for both sides. I think from my perspective, and I think from my colleagues right here, this is really a day when we are here to exchange information with the patients. We are giving them some basic knowledge of their disease, showing some examples so they understand better what's going on in their own eyes, and it makes it easier to understand it as well. So why are we treating you? Because you can see the changes, you can see how your eye is affected and how it's responding to treatment. So it helps immensely. I think the patients come to a better understanding. And on the other hand, it is us learning from them, their experiences, their frustrations, what we are not doing, and which will be part of our future tasks of how to improve what we do.
So a learning process on both sides.
I believe so. Yeah, that's my view. Well, I think the avenue is really making sure that we can identify all these birdshot patients who are somewhere, not only in the UK, but everywhere, get them registered into a society so we can reach them. We can reach them when we have new ideas, when we have new protocols and new drugs to test. And that is the thing that slows down any research, is the lack of recruitment. And that comes from the fact that you see only a bunch of patients. But if you have a group of patients motivated to be involved, and you can reach them easily and explain to them what the goals are, the likelihood of them accepting that, especially if they know you, is much better. So this link of the consultants and the patients is really essential for trust. You know, they're understanding who we are, what we're here for, and that we are doing all we can to help them. But we need them to help us too.
Thank you very much for your time.